our bodies are smart, right? And they can actually store that melatonin and then release it at the proper time of day, as long as our circadian rhythm isn't disrupted. And so what I mean by that is, even if I'm using a big full body device in the morning and helping my body function more efficiently, produce more natural melatonin, and then in the evening, as long as I'm not disrupting my circadian rhythm and blasting myself with a lot of bright blue light at night, then my body's going to respond and release that melatonin at the appropriate time. And I think the important aspects of the story here is just that we all need to be cognizant of light and its impact in our health.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As a naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body balance, and inner badass, these are the themes we are exploring. So if you've listened to the podcast before, and I'm guessing some of you have, you know that I have a real interest in this concept called biohacking. Biohacking are the little things that we can do to alter and optimize our own physiology and frankly protect us from the influences of our world and the way that we engage in the world today. And one of the things I have talked about in the past with respect to biohacking is the need to protect ourselves from blue light. Blue light is the type of toxic light that is produced by our phones and our computer screens. And it's pretty commonplace in the scientific literature and popular culture that we understand that blue light is a problem. And one of the reasons that it is a problem is not only can it throw off our circadian rhythm by hitting the retina in the back of the eye, but exposure in general to blue light, what we're finding is that it causes damage to the mitochondria. Mitochondria, if you can think back to grade 9 science, are the little powerhouses in your cells that literally produce energy. And so the question was posed, if blue light can impact our mitochondria negatively, is there a type of light that actually can influence them positively? And it turns out there is. It's red light. In particular, there's a wavelength with respect to red light therapy that enables your mitochondria actually to become more efficient. There's a ton of other influences of the red light therapy, but I'm going to let my guest today go into that. My guest on the episode today is Scott Nelson. Scott is the co-founder of Juve, the first company to develop a full body light therapy device designed for home use. Prior to starting Juve, he spent his entire professional career in leadership positions in some of the largest medical device companies in the world. One of the things that I love about Juve and how I discovered them a few years ago is that this was really a device and an opportunity for people to have some agency and control over optimizing mitochondrial health without more supplementation. Everyone wants to know what we can do with diet and lifestyle. And for most people, they think that means diet and movement. But the reality is lifestyle and the things that we expose ourselves to at home on a daily basis can really move our health in a positive direction if you know what they are. And that's exactly what we are talking about today. Scott was a wealth of information. We started to talk about some of the conditions and some of the physiological outcomes, such as inflammation and low melatonin production that red light therapy can actually help with. And then we get into how can we really start to use this device to take our health to a whole new level. It is truly my pleasure to introduce to you the co-founder of Juve, Scott Nelson. Scott Nelson, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Megan, it's a pleasure to be on the show. Really looking forward to the discussion.
I am very excited about this discussion. We were saying just before we jumped on, I've kind of selfishly brought you on today because I have been looking at Juve for a while. You are the co-founder of a company called Juve. You guys have a device that emits red light and it's incredibly helpful for people's health. And I really want to break down the science and go deep on what that is, but maybe we can back up first. Scott, can you just give us a bit of an overview on what Juve is all about and how you ended up here? Because I know you do a lot of talking related to medical devices and cool new things on the market. And this is definitely an area of interest to our audience.
Yeah, and I think for anyone listening that's not familiar with red light therapy or just light and its impact on health, I think it's one of the most underappreciated things when it comes to sort of optimizing our bodies and optimizing our health in general. So I think everyone that's listening will probably get a lot out of this, and we'll try to make it as impactful as possible. But specific to my experience and kind of like how Juve sort of was born, I personally spent most of my I'll give you the short story. We can certainly go deeper, but I spent all my entire career in the traditional med tech world. So with companies like Medtronic, Covidien, Boston Scientific, primarily in the peripheral vascular space. So dealing with products like arterial stents and venous thrombectomy catheters, what I thought was kind of, you know, real kind of med tech stuff or real science. And then when my wife and her sister actually introduced me and then my brother-in-law to red light therapy, I think he was both very skeptical, and I was certainly very skeptical of red light, and I thought it was complete woo-woo science. I immediately went to the published peer-reviewed clinical data because I was like, there's no way there's any like this has to be kind of a joke, right? Another kind of fad or trend. And after doing a little bit of research, I quickly found myself going down a rabbit trail because the sheer amount of published peer-reviewed research was unbelievable to me. I've never operated in a therapeutic arena with this much science. So I was quickly blown away. And this was kind of back in early 2015. And then we, you know, as we begin to kind of, you know, discuss this more, there appeared to be some pretty significant gaps in the market in terms of red light therapy products that were available. And so that led us down this path of kind of introducing the concept of full body light therapy, which can be used ideally at home, but we're also seeing a strong uptick in kind of in commercial facilities across the country too. So that kind of takes us to the present day with kind of our current offering.
Okay, what is red light therapy?
The best analogy that I can use is light is very similar to macronutrients in food, right? Most of us that are listening to this kind of this conversation understand that our bodies metabolize proteins, carbs, fats, et cetera, in various ways, and especially at different times of the day, right? So if we eat a high glycemic carbohydrate at night and spike our insulin levels, that's not a great recipe for success, right? So we kind of understand that basic concept. Well, the same thing applies to light. Our bodies respond and metabolize different wavelengths of light and at different times especially at different times of the day. So as an example, if you think about kind of the morning sunrise and then the morning sunset, our circadian rhythm, which is kind of the master clock of our bodies, is sort of built upon kind of the morning sunrise and sunset. And when you think about the sunset, most of us, you know, myself included, get into a habit of looking at, you know, computer screens, TVs, et cetera, once the sun sets in the evening. And those devices are eliminating bright blue light, right? That tells our circadian rhythm that it's midday sun, right? That we should be awake, when in reality, our body should begin to settle down for sleep. And I only share that example because just to kind of prove the point that our bodies respond to these different wavelengths of light. And red and near infrared light, which we'll focus on for most of this conversation, these wavelengths of light actually fall into a very narrow window within the light spectrum that academic researchers or photomedicine researchers call the optical window or the therapeutic window. It's a very narrow window. And these wavelengths of light actually have a unique ability to stimulate cellular activity, more specifically mitochondrial activity. And the byproduct of that is a number of things, one of which is more ATP energy or adenosine triphosphate energy, which leads to a whole host of benefits. So everything from muscle, you know, increase or faster muscle recovery to better skin health to increased weight and fat loss, believe it or not, to better cognitive function, to decrease joint pain and inflammation. Kind of a laundry list of benefits that are all supported by peer-reviewed science, but it all kind of draws back to that same core mechanism of action that these specific wavelengths of light, red and near infrared, have that unique ability to stimulate mitochondrial activity.
Yeah, and for people who are like, I kind of remember mitochondria. It was, I think, grade 9 science. The mitochondria are what actually make energy in your body. So they're inside your cells. They're really complex, and they are absolutely, like you said, highly susceptible to the information that is passed along to them. So whether that be nutrients or byproducts of inflammation, depending on the status of health in your body, your mitochondria are going to respond accordingly. So if you want more energy, you've got to take care of the environment in which those mitochondria are found. And the science on that is quite unequivocal in that respect.
I like your idea of kind of harkening back to ninth grade biology class, because that term mitochondria probably does sound familiar, but it is literally like the engine of our cells. And we have cells outside of our plasma. We have cells throughout our entire body. And so it's very important to make sure to be cognizant of the impact that, you know, everyday stressors have on mitochondrial activity. It's very similar to like the engine of a car. You know, we take our vehicles in for a service, you know, a appointment, you know, once a quarter, maybe once every 6 months or so, something like that. We should be kind of thinking about the same thing in terms of our, you know, the mitochondria throughout our body.
Yeah, no, I love that. Mitochondria are those things that you drew that were kind of oval in shape, and then you did this squiggly line back and forth in the middle of that oval. But they are so, so important. I actually wish I understood and someone had made a connection towards mitochondria and biohacking when I was in high school. I probably would have enjoyed the conversation a little bit more. Okay, so is there a difference then in terms of, like, when we're talking about your device, the Juve, like, it is a big wall of red lights. Is there a difference between that and sitting in an infrared sauna, for example?
Yeah, that's probably one of the most common questions that come up. And I think it's just when we talk about these questions of light therapy or photobiomodulation, which is actually kind of more the technical term, versus saunas, it's important to remember that subject that I mentioned earlier, in the sense that our bodies respond to different wavelengths of light in different ways. So the short answer is light therapy or photobiomodulation is very different than something like an infrared sauna. Both are very good. It's like comparing cardiovascular exercise versus weight training. Both can be very good, but you typically don't do sprints and, you know, do overhead dumbbell raises at the same time. So they're both different, but they're both very good. And the difference relies really in the wavelengths of light that are delivered within those two kind of modalities. So with saunas, especially a dry sauna that's delivering infrared light, most of that infrared light is actually mid and far infrared. So the infrared spectrum of light is very, very broad. It's like think about it like a football field. It's actually very broad, and mid and far infrared wavelengths of light actually do a great job of producing heat, which is great for the purposes of a sauna. The goal is to induce heat stress on your body. With light therapy or photobiomodulation, our devices are delivering red and near infrared light, which is a much more narrow spectrum. And these specific wavelengths of light have that unique ability to stimulate mitochondrial activity in a healthy way. They're both very different, both good, but it all comes back to just the wavelengths of light that are delivered through these modalities and the fact that our bodies respond differently.
Okay, so people who haven't renovated their bathroom since 1986 cannot rely on that big red light when they get out of the shower to have the same medicinal benefit. Is that what we're saying here in short?
Yeah, that comes up typically in the same type of conversation as these heat lamps that you can find at you know, a Home Depot or a Lowe's or any sort of like local department store. It's the same concept, right? A heat lamp gets very hot, right? And the reason it gets hot is because it's delivering mostly mid and far infrared wavelengths of light that do a great job of heating up, right? So sometimes you can even see those being used in kind of a sauna type of environment, which they can work okay. They get very hot to the touch, so you have to be careful of that.
When we talk about light being problematic for us, like blue spectrums of light, are there other elements in terms of lighting that is toxic to our bodies, or problematic to our bodies is probably more accurate?
Blue light gets like a bad rap a lot of the times, and maybe rightfully so, because we're definitely exposed to it probably too much and at the wrong times of the day. But as an example, blue light can be beneficial, especially in the mornings, because it serves as a reset to our circadian rhythm. And I'll kind of go back to that example that I shared earlier of the sunrise and sunset. If we kind of operate within that context, our bodies have evolved and adapted to the morning, to operate off the morning sunrise and sunset. Well, once the sun sets, if you think about it, if we didn't have any artificial lighting, it would be dark, right? And our bodies are beginning to prepare for sleep. But if we're blasted with blue light in the evenings, that's going to be very disruptive to our circadian rhythm, which leads to a pretty drastic negative impact to our sleep. And so I think it's really just it's best to kind of start within the context or confines of viewing light in the proper way, and typically through the lens of the morning sunrise and sunset, using that as kind of a baseline. And then thinking about our modern lifestyles, we really don't we really don't get enough natural light on a daily basis. In fact, there's a pretty well documented statistic that Americans now spend, you know, over 90% of our times indoors, right, away from natural sunlight, under artificial light. And that's, you know, I would argue that's such a drastic difference than even 150, 200 years ago, that's playing a negative role in terms of our overall health. Our bodies respond to different wavelengths of light. We should be getting more natural light, if at all possible. And then if we're not getting enough natural light, we need to begin to think about supplementing kind of our diet or our lifestyle, so to speak, with healthy wavelengths of light. And those healthy wavelengths of light are red and near infrared light, as that's present almost throughout the entire day in natural sunlight.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I traditionally think of the problems with blue light as being something that really impacts the back of the retina. Like the eye has a really critical role to play here. When we're talking about the challenges of blue light, are we talking about it really in terms of it being a problem on the entire body, or is it the eye that we're talking about?
It's both. So there's certainly a fair amount of clinical data. In fact, probably by the time this is produced, we'll have a really long form article on this very topic. In fact, I was just reviewing it last night, which is kind of interesting. But yeah, the negative impact is twofold. One, it's on the actual retina of our eyes, right? And impacting that in a negative way. The other aspect is really the disruption to our circadian rhythm. So it's really twofold. And so blue natural blue light can be beneficial if you're not in the morning to help reset your circadian rhythm if you're in an area that doesn't get a lot of natural sunlight. But using it at the wrong time of day, you know, sitting in front of a really bright TV screen or a computer at night is not only detrimental to our circadian, like it throws our circadian rhythm out of whack. But if you're pretty close to it, like probably you are or I am right now to my computers, it's probably a good idea to be using some sort of day blocker type of glasses that help block some of that excess blue light, especially if you're sitting in front of a computer like most of us are for prolonged periods of the day.
And is there any benefit in terms of, I mean, it's not just light that's hitting our body. We were having a conversation before we jumped on about the influence of having our phones near our computers when we record and how that influences sound. There's so many unseen factors that are interacting with our physiology, even if we're talking about Wi-Fi networks and electromagnetic fields. When we're looking at the influence of red light therapy, are there counteractions to some of those influences as well?
Yeah, it's hard to offer definitive guidance around that topic. Other than it's best all of those sort of artificial instances, right? Because of our modern lifestyle, they cause cellular stress, right? And it's not just those, right? It's cellular stress can come from a wide variety of things. Maybe it's intentionally induced by exercise. Maybe it's stress related to work. Actually, maybe it's stress related to a lack of sleep, or stress just from excess, you know, EMIs, EMFs. Way more blue light than maybe our bodies can handle, et cetera. And so all of those are caused by cellular stress. And what healthy wavelengths of light, like red and near infrared light, they can help actually in terms of helping to counterbalance that in the form of recovery. So helping our cells overcome that stress. And that's been shown time and time again in clinical research, especially with regards to inflammation. It's very well documented that these wavelengths of light, red and near infrared light, help actually to shift our immune system from an M1 phenotype to an M2 phenotype. So in essence, it's shifting our immune system from something that's pro-inflammatory to one that's anti-inflammatory. And I think that just speaks to the fact that these healthy wavelengths of light actually can help our cells overcome a lot of those modern day stress. But the reality is we just don't spend enough time in front of healthy, natural wavelengths of light. We just don't get enough of them. And that's from a wide variety of reasons, right? Most of it's just simply because we're too busy and we're in an office environments that are not outside in natural sunlight. Or we live in parts of the world that just don't get a lot of natural sunlight for prolonged periods of time throughout the year. So I think that's probably the best way to view it, that all of these issues that are caused by our modern day lifestyles can be sort of, in a sense, sort of counterbalanced by healthy wavelengths of light.
Okay, so people are like, all right, we get it. Blue is bad, red is good. What do your devices look like? Well, when we're talking about being in front of red light, what does that experience actually look like for people?
I'm gonna take you back to our origin story with Juve. Kind of this was dating back to early 2015. What we saw in the market were a fair number of these small little handheld devices, handheld red light devices. Some delivered near infrared light, and you still see those today. In fact, there's probably more of them today. We actually make a handheld device today. But what we noticed is that was really all that was available, is these small little handheld devices. Some of which were vastly underpowered, and so what that means is that it means two things, right, to the end user. One is that you can only treat a targeted area of your body, like, and that can be okay if you're trying to treat like maybe a sore elbow or a sore joint, but if it's underpowered, it you have to use it for a really long period of time to receive any sort of clinically relevant result. And so that's why we sort of like saw some of those gaps and thought, wait a second, these wavelengths of light are really healthy for our entire body. Our skin is our largest organ, and we have photoreceptors throughout all of our skin. So it's best to deliver these wavelengths of light throughout your whole body. And so that's why we kind of came up with this we were the first to come up with this concept of full body light therapy. And so our devices specifically are modular in nature. And what I mean by that is they're kind of like Lego blocks, in a sense that you can start with one smaller device. And then if you like it, you can add on to it over time and build out this big full body system. And like as an example, the one that I use every morning is we call it our Juve Elite, which is our largest system, but it's comprised of six different modular devices that are all kind of put together, and they're connected physically and electronically. And so like me specifically, what I do is I stand in front of it for about, 10 to 12 minutes on top of a vibration plate. And I just do simple breath work for that amount of time every morning. And it serves as kind of a nice reset to my day. Other people use it in the evenings to help calm their body, because it's pretty well documented that these wavelengths of light actually help your body shift from a sympathetic state to a parasympathetic state as well. So yeah, there's a number of different ways to use it, but I think that's probably the key thing to think about when it comes to our devices specifically, is that modular design that allows you to kind of build out this full body system.
And if someone's like, okay, I could just have it all, is there incremental benefit? Like, should they just have it all? Is that, do you ease into it? Like, I love the idea that it's modular, but what drives that people ease into the investment, that they don't necessarily need that much red light or that coverage at first? Like, how does that help them make a decision about what they should be doing? What's the ideal?
Yeah, it's usually more of a budget conversation. So our design is unique to us, because our core thesis as a company is that full body light therapy is optimal, and we're beginning to demonstrate that in clinical studies. We've got about five or six ongoing right now. Because of our core thesis that full body light therapy is optimal, we wanted to design our products that would allow someone that maybe doesn't want to go all in at the outset, to kind of go build into that slowly. And so, yeah, we have a lot of people that just, purchase our larger systems from the get go, and they're off to the races. But others want to kind of like try it out and test it out and kind of experiment a little bit first before they make a significant investment. So that's kind of the cool thing about our modular design. It really does offer a lot of flexibility to people that aren't ready to go all in, or for those that just want to kind of dabble at first, and try it out.
And for some of the, like, I know you've got some handheld ones, and some of the people I've talked to who use it, they're like, oh, I bring it with me when I'm traveling, and all of these different pieces. If we're going to use a handheld version of Juve, is there a part of our body that is better to expose the light to than others?
That handheld device, we call it the Juve Go. It's actually our most recent product launch, and it's a great little device, primarily designed for travel purposes, right, or on the go purposes. Hence the name. It's battery powered, wireless and rechargeable. It's kind of a cool little device, and actually delivers the same therapeutic power as our larger modular devices. But the best way to probably use those is I would think about using them in two fashions. So one is it's great, like it is great if you travel a lot, or if you want to take it to the office, et cetera, and you can use it to treat like, specific areas of your body, like a sore knee, a sore elbow. My wife, a lot of times will use, the Juve Go in bed and just kind of shine it right on her forehead. Cause it's pretty clear that there's some pretty pronounced, cognitive benefits with near infrared light, when shining on your forehead, especially in the evenings. She'll a lot of times just lay it on her gut, because there's really some compelling early evidence that shows near infrared light actually helps induce a better environment for a healthy gut microbiome. Long story short, the handheld device is really best for those targeted treatments. The other way to use those is just to kind of counteract excess blue light at night. So maybe instead of, you know, if you're in a room in your house and instead of like flipping on artificial white or bright blue light at night, which is pretty well known that that is that does disrupt your circadian rhythm, which you've kind of chatted about already, maybe flip on the Juve Go, you know, and use that device just to illuminate the room with healthy wavelengths of light that aren't disruptive to your circadian rhythm. So those are kind of a couple different ways to use a device like that. But it is, I guess the important point is it is a targeted device, right? You're not going to get full body benefits from using a small little handheld device like that. It's got other purposes for sure, but it's not impossible per se, but it's going to be pretty difficult to treat your whole body with a device like that.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Scott, tell me a little bit more about the influence of your devices and red light therapy in general on sleep. This is the thing everyone wants to understand.
There's no doubt. It's definitely a trending topic. And I think we're recording this in late May here of 2019, but Pokemon, like the big kind of well-known game, especially for kids, maybe not necessarily kids, there's some adults that get into that as well, just released a...
Don't judge me.
A device to try to gamify sleep. So I think that's sort of a signal that there's a lot more people that are paying attention to sleep and its impact on our overall health. And the cool thing about red and near infrared light is it's pretty well documented that this type of therapy helps our bodies produce more natural melatonin, which we all know can play a pretty big role in sleep. In fact, you know, there's probably some of your listeners that have taken melatonin supplements to help induce better sleep. And the kind of interesting sort of add-on to that is that even if you're using this type of modality in the morning and helping your body produce more natural melatonin, our bodies are smart, right? And they can actually store that melatonin and then release it at the proper time of day as long as our circadian rhythm isn't disrupted. And so what I mean by that is even if I'm using a big full body device in the morning and helping my body function more efficiently, produce more natural melatonin, and then in the evening, as long as I'm not disrupting my circadian rhythm and blasting myself with a lot of bright blue light at night, then my body's going to respond and release that melatonin at the appropriate time. And I think the moral of the story, or the important aspects of the story here, is just that we all need to be cognizant of light and its impact in our health, and kind of thinking about it holistically. And that at night, yeah, that doesn't mean that we can't still watch shows or like work at night, but just like throw on a pair of blue blocking glasses, use like the Flux app on your computer. There's baby steps that you can take to like just eliminate some of these things that are very, very easy. But again, we all need to just become more cognizant of the role light plays in our overall health. And red and near infrared light can certainly plays a big role in that, especially in terms of helping our bodies be optimized for sleep. But just don't forget about the other side of the equation, and that, you know, you got to be cognizant of excess blue light, especially in the evenings. And the best way to kind of sum up that conversation is thinking about just stuff that we already know, right? If you're working out 4 or 5 times a week and then your diet's not in check, you're probably not going to see the type of results you're looking for. The same thing kind of applies to light. So if you're using red and near infrared light therapy on a consistent basis, but then not thinking about, you know, excess blue light at night and the profound impact that can have, then that's probably not going to lead to a lot of good results. They both need to be balanced out.
Well, you made a good point there that none of these therapeutics are ever going to work in isolation. Even a clean diet is not going to work well in the absence of good sleep and effective movement. And you guys work with a ton of biohackers and people who get into the granularity of health. Where have you seen complementarity between what you guys are doing and red light therapy and then other therapeutics or supplementation or diet pieces? Like, where do you see this like just amazing synergy?
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of synergy, especially considering, like, I guess where I get excited is about kind of the stacking of therapies during sort of a red light or near infrared light sort of session. You know, if you're using a full body device like ours for, you know, 10 to 12 minutes, like you can take advantage of that 10 to 12 minutes. And I mentioned this earlier, like myself specifically, I stand on a vibration plate and sort of, you know, and there's some pretty decent science that shows, you know, those, that vibration type of technology can you know, sort of enhance your lymphatic system. There's some other ancillary benefits as well. So that's kind of an interesting way to do it. I know a lot of people use like the neuro devices, like the Halo device, while doing, you know, a full body red light therapy treatment. In fact, there's really some interesting data that we're working on that clearly shows really some profound cognitive changes during a red and near infrared light session. So those are just a few examples of some ways to kind of, you know, sort of hack or biohack your red light therapy session. Another one is just using, you know, binaural. A lot of people, especially at night, will use like binaural beats and do simple breath work at night to help really shift your body into more relaxing state in preparation for sleep. So those are a couple different examples, but I think that's a whole another arena to, you know, to explore, is like the all of the other synergies that can happen along with red and near infrared light.
Yeah, I love it. We have a new EEG brain scanner in our office called the Wavi. And I'm excited to start to really see what happens in terms of some of these really specific cognitive scores as you introduce some of these therapies.
Yeah, and there's a group actually here in Southern California they're a really, really great group of researchers and clinicians that study deuterium. And deuterium is this heavy hydrogen isotope that can kind of wreak havoc on our mitochondria and our cells. And they're seeing some really profound benefits with kind of deuterium depletion protocols in their patients, especially with those that are using red and near infrared light therapy, because there's a lot of synergy between the two. So there's just a lot of potential things. So it's really, I don't want to say limitless per se, but there's kind of a blue ocean of different ways to that this type of therapy can be synergistic with others.
I love it. And with some of these ideas, when you're talking about the fact that the red light therapy can have an influence on melatonin and inflammation, and recognizing and calling out the fact that you certainly can't apply this and say that it is a curative or treatment for any particular condition, but are there clusters of conditions, like cancer is a condition where melatonin and inflammation play a very important role, autoimmune conditions, are you seeing from your clients reports back in terms of how they are using this therapy for some of the other things they're managing in their lives?
Yeah, there's no doubt. And we're, you know, full disclosure, we're always sensitive about making various claims with our devices and in chronic conditions. So I'll speak to kind of just red light therapy in general, maybe not necessarily our devices, but there's no doubt when it comes to like very, whether it's an acute condition or a chronic like autoimmune condition, there's like a lot of evidence. So we're talking about everything from a wide variety of autoimmune conditions, whether it's Hashimoto's or whether it's psoriasis, you know, that's obviously related to our skin, then just chronic rheumatoid arthritis. There's a lot of benefit, a lot of data to support that red and near infrared light, especially near infrared light, helps support symptoms from arthritis, whether it's rheumatoid or just a different kind of arthritis. Chronic brain injuries, people that have suffered from a stroke and deal with muscle spasticity issues. I could really go on and on about like very, very prescriptive kind of condition related issues that are definitely helped and optimized when it comes to using, you know, red and near infrared light therapy.
This is so exciting. And I know, Scott, you have a podcast where you look at other devices in terms of medical devices and things on the market. Do you have some other favorite tools and biohacking toys in your arsenal that you really love to play with?
I wouldn't say like my podcast is like that. I would say I'm a dabbler when it comes to the podcasting scene. So I love to do it, but it's really kind of time permitting. But I do like gadgets and tech. Most of us are still not going to get away from blue light at night, bright white light or bright blue light at night, and wearing a simple pair of blue light blocking glasses at night can be extremely beneficial. I've already mentioned, you know, vibration technology, that type of stuff has been around a while. I like it because it's easy to do while it's easy to fit in while I do a light therapy treatment. I think some of the I'm not sure if you've seen the naked device, which is kind of almost looks like a mirror that can showcase body contouring changes over time. I think that's a really cool device.
I was like, that sounds awful.
No, it's like a mirror that uses infrared as a scanner.
Oh, okay.
And it's almost like, I'm not sure if you're familiar with like the Dexafit. Yeah. It's nowhere near the capabilities of a Dexafit, don't get me wrong. But it is kind of like that, where it actually scans your body and can give you almost like a 3D image of your body and showcase changes over time, which I think kind of basically takes the scale that, you know, the traditional weight scale to a whole nother level. You know, you mentioned the Oura Ring already. There's a number of different, you know, tracking apps related to, you know, health tracking apps like Oura Ring. I think Oura is probably one of the most sophisticated devices, but I know Withings makes like the sleep pad, which I've heard very good things about. I haven't personally used it, but a lot of people I know and trust use it and actually claim that it's tracking is very, very accurate. You know, and then there's another app, and I'm trying to remember the name of it. It's Heads Up, and it's not necessarily a device per se, but it's an app, it's a software app that allows you to actually curate a lot of these things together into one dashboard. I think it's Health Up, I believe, or Heads Up Health, I believe, is the name of the app. I think that's really cool because a lot of the stuff can get disparate really quick.
Yeah.
And so you're checking, you know, 8 or 10 apps, and you know, with something like that, you can curate it all into one dashboard. So I think that's really cool. But yeah, those are a few things that kind of come to mind off the top of my head.
Hey, fellow go-getters. So we've got a lot going on right now over at Anthropology Performance Labs, and I want to make sure that you guys are in the loop. We have groups and contests and quizzes and meal plans and all sorts of things that you can get your hands on. And the best place for you to be in the know is actually to ensure that you are following and hanging out and engaging over on the gram. My personal handle, which is @Dr. Megan Walker, is where most of this activity is currently taking place. And so I'm going to invite all of you to come on over and to follow and to play along. This way you can engage with our weekly guests, get direct links to some of the things that they're talking about in our show notes, and have access to some of the coolest new quizzes, ideas, and games and links that we have in the pipeline over at Anthropology. Head on over to Instagram, hit follow, and let's keep in touch. My handle over there is @Dr. Megan Walker, and let's keep the conversation happening. Scott, I think this is a perfect place to transition into the second component of our interview. And I call this section our KPIs, or key performance indicators. So just like we have them in our business, I believe that we have them in how we live our lives as well. So I've got some rapid fire questions coming your way.
Sure.
All right. You juved this morning on your vibrating plate. So you're like, I am poised and ready to go. What is your audacious goal for the next year?
My audacious goal is probably business centric, and it's to, we're at a point now where I think there's a realistic opportunity to double our top line, and I'm not going to share top line numbers, but to double our top line, which is it would be a pretty amazing feat, kind of considering where we're at from a business standpoint. So that's probably the biggest goal that I have.
So exciting. What is the one thing you are most consistent with respect to your health, besides red light therapy?
Besides red light therapy? I would say, I'll give you two things. One I would say is just being on a daily basis. I don't think it necessarily has to be something formal like a journal, but just taking time out to be grateful, to show gratitude. I think that's incredibly important. And you know, we're starting to hear more and more people talk about that and its impact on kind of overall emotional health. But I think that's really important, and especially for someone like me, and I imagine, you know, your audience is, you know, it's full of entrepreneurs that are probably, you know, driven pretty hard. But if we don't, and I've seen this in my own life, if we don't take time to on a consistent basis, ideally daily basis, to really step aside and think about the things we're grateful for, I think we're missing out a lot. And then that's one thing. And then the other thing that I've probably started to incorporate this more consistently, I should say, over the past 9 months is, and I do this during a red light therapy treatment, but just breath work, you know, and a lot of times I'll do those together, right? I'll do, you know, breath work, and at the same time be really mindful of just gratefulness and things that I'm grateful for in my life. So there's kind of, you know, I can kind of do both at the same time. But breath work, I just think is really important. So those are probably the two things that I'd come back to.
What is something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know?
You know, the only thing that comes to mind, really, and this is not something I share much, but I still think it's kind of a cool accomplishment, is I finished with I'm dating myself. This was before, like, you could get above a 4.0, from a grade point perspective. But I finished high school and college with a 4.0 GPA. So, that's something that I guess
is awesome.
Sort of badass, but that's pretty old school. I mean, that's a long time ago now, but maybe it's the first thing that comes to mind.
That's awesome. What do you do for fun or play?
You know, my wife and I have four kids. So a lot of, and we're also, you know, pretty obviously involved in running a kind of a bootstrap startup. So, so any free time is usually spent with our kids. And I especially, and I'm trying to make this more of a consistent habit, is making sure that I carve out time for kind of my own training or workouts on a daily basis, and then carving out a little bit more time where I can kind of coach up my boys, you know, on a daily basis, where they're doing more functional body type of movement. And the reason I say I'm trying to do better at splitting those apart, because usually it doesn't work out well when I'm trying to do both at the same time. So that's kind of like more of a hobby, and really just kind of quite honestly spending more time, more quality time with our kids is probably the biggest sort of side hobby, if you will.
Do you do red light therapy with your kids?
Not at the same time. They're getting older, but 100% our kids use it. Yeah, absolutely. In fact, it's very beneficial. I mean, and really, if you've ever had kids and they've had, you know, any sort of jaundice, you think about the fact that in a hospital setting, you know, usually if your baby's jaundice, you know, there's light therapy is used. There's different wavelengths of light that are used to help babies overcome jaundice. And so, actually, we're always careful about what we recommend in terms of, you know, using our types of devices on children. But like at a high level, yes, these wavelengths of light are very, very beneficial for kids of all ages.
Who is inspiring you right now?
These are the two guys that come to mind, just because I've admired their work for a prolonged period of time. One is Andrew Warner, who runs the Mixergy podcast. I started listening to his podcast, gosh, back in like 2009. It's what got me back into, or 2008, I should say. It's what got me into podcasting way back then in 2009. I think I recorded my first episode in 2009. But I've just admired his approach and his consistency at kind of doing what he loves in the podcasting world. And he's a fantastic interviewer that's really honed his craft over time. And I've learned a ton from that podcast. In terms of like just hearing about other startup stories and lessons learned from failures and accomplishments and whatnot. So he comes to mind. And then also another guy that comes to mind is Rand Fishkin, who I don't know personally. I've just really kind of admired his work from afar. He's the founder of Moz.com. And his recent book, which I think was released about a year ago, maybe, called Lost and Founder, is really, really good. I highly recommend it. And the reason it really stands out is his approach to being like just transparent about like his business journey, his personal journey. I just really, really appreciate. So those are probably the two guys that come to mind right away.
Last question for you, Scott. Entrepreneurship. Are we born this way, or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
I think there's natural skill sets that maybe someone tends to have that lend themselves more to entrepreneurship. I would tend to say that. However, just even thinking about my own journey, like when I was, you know, in my elementary and middle school, and even quite honestly, early high school years, I was incredibly shy. And I'd still very much kind of consider myself more of an introvert. I'm probably what Dan Pink calls an ambivert, but kind of I tend to be a little bit more introverted. But which wouldn't think you they'd lend that those types of characteristics would lend themselves in like, you know, the world of entrepreneurship. But once I sort of, you know, once I was done with college and really got into sort of like the professional working environment, there were these skill sets that begin to emerge, right? Like an intense competitiveness, desire to be incredibly efficient with your time, like from a productivity standpoint, et cetera. So I think that's what I mean by answering that question that way. I think there's like some innate skill sets that lend themselves well, but I don't think that limits someone from not becoming, you know, an entrepreneur. In fact, I think, you know, there's you know, that it's something that, like, I think is the in my opinion, it's something that we're trying to coach our kids up into, like, in terms of, you know, leading with entrepreneurship versus kind of falling into a traditional kind of work environment once they're kind of done with school.
Yeah, well, it's a different world these days, isn't it? It's the need to be able to create something and create a future for yourself exists in a way that it never did before.
No doubt.
And I love what you're doing, Scott. I love what you are doing to help support people who are on a mission and people who need their health available to them at a moment's notice. I am super excited to get started with my Juve. And I know other people are going to want to check out what you're doing. Where can we send them to learn a little bit more about what you're up to?
The best place is probably our website, juve.com, J-O-O-V-V, so two O's, two V's, juve.com. And if you're into, like, the nerdy, geeky stuff like I am, I would go to our Learn page or our Learn library. It's chock full of long-form articles that are all really well-sourced. If you want to stay high level and just kind of interested in what people have to say about, like, the therapy or our devices in general, go to our reviews page. We post everything, even the negative reviews. Fortunately, there's very few of those, but you can kind of hear what people have to say in their own voice about using, you know, light therapy. And a lot of times it's for the first time in their lives. So I think that's a pretty cool area of our site too. So juve.com or hit up our social. We're pretty active, especially on Instagram at Juve Social is our handle. So hit us up there too.
Amazing. Scott, thanks so much for being here.
Awesome. Thanks, Megan. Really enjoyed the conversation.
If you love today's episode, there's a few things that you can do. If you have not subscribed already to the Anthropology Podcast, head on over to wherever you access this, Stitcher or iTunes, and hit that subscribe button. While you were there, we would love it if you could leave us a review. And I know it's the information in our podcast that really is most valuable for you. And you can access our show notes and learn more about Scott by going to meganwalker.com/podcast/episode 122.